from the latest on Caribbean cruises to kosher safaris, pilgrimages to Jewish Eastern Europe, and award-winning wines and international cuisine in sun-drenched Tel Aviv. Sit back and enjoy the trip with the travel edition of the Jerusalem Post podcast.
Hello.
Good. Well, actually, for us, it's good morning.
Yes. Where are we?
We're doing something that certainly British people do on a regular basis, but it's very, very different to how they do it in England. Do you remember when...
Sit in a car park.
Sitting in a car park. But in England, it's always raining, and you have what we call in England a flask, what Americans call a thermos, with a bit of tea or coffee in it and a sandwich. And you're trying to look out at a view of a lake or something, and you actually can't because the whole car's steamed up. And then you just turn around because it's still raining, and you go back home. So we're not doing that.
No, we seem to be near a construction site, but with a view of the Mediterranean in the distance, Nazareth in front of us.
It's actually quite remarkable that we are way, way up in the hills of the Lower Galilee in Nazareth at a viewpoint, and we can see way, way out to the Mediterranean. And behind us is a stunning structure by the name of...
the Nebi Sa'in Mosque.
Which has a wonderful golden dome and a minaret. But as you say, it's surrounded by a construction site. So we might not recommend looking around you, but if you get to this mosque, if you look straight ahead towards the Mediterranean, you get a stunning view.
Why are we here, though?
We're here for something completely different, but as we've done in a few of our recent episodes, we thought we'd give you a taste of a part of Israel while we're introducing somewhere completely different in the world. So it's about introducing what's coming up on today's podcast.
So firstly today, we're going nowhere near Nazareth. We're going to Zambia.
I really, really, really want to go to Zambia, which is the home of the walking or hiking safari. More of that to come. And then we are going to be heading off to New York.
I like New York in June. How about you?
That's very good, because everybody else will go, it's up to you, New York. New York.
It is June today as we record, but by the time this is released, it probably won't be June.
We will be getting a taste of Jewish art, culture, heritage, and history in the New York Jewish Museum. To give you a bit of a feel for what's coming up later on, we've got our usual two quiz questions. Take it away, Mark.
Question number one, what was the former name of Zambia?
And question number two, Jacob Bar Simpson became the first man to do what?
Bart Simpson?
Bar Simpson. The answer's at the end of the pod.
I'm very grateful to be alive and stood here in the market, having just descended downhill through some of the narrowest, steepest streets I've ever seen in Israel.
We've come to Nazareth's city market.
We have. I think we found the quiet corner. There must be like a library section here because it's allowed us to record and move away from the hustle and bustle around the corner.
This is also much more of a legitimate local market, so many of your tourist trappings you won't find here. And because this is a mixed town of Christians and Arabs, and Jews live on the hill in Upper Nazareth, in this market you will find all sorts of clothing. So it's not just the more modest clothing that you would expect from a Middle Eastern bazaar.
And it's not just clothing, there is food here. We've decided for some reason to stand outside the butcher's, and the smell of the butcher's is now wafting over here.
I have a quick question for you. Do you like okra?
No, can't stand it.
Why don't you like okra? We're surrounded by okra where there's no butcher.
There's lovely okra and beans and everything in a sack, but okra, when you cook it, it just goes soft. It looks so nice, and it's the most disappointing food I've had.
Oh, okra with a bit of tomato, cooked tomato. I really like it.
Or lady's fingers is another name.
Absolutely.
Away from Nazareth now, today's first destination is beautiful Zambia. We spoke to Chivunga Lungu, Director of Marketing at the Zambia Tourism Authority, about what fun and adventures we could have there.
Ooh. Zambia has a lovely story. The story of Zambia comes all the way from way before it got its independence. It's a country that is situated in the southern part of Africa, in southern Africa, and centrally situated in southern Africa, got its independence from in 1964. It currently has a population of about 18 million, not so many compared to most of the countries around. Beautifully located because it's surrounded by eight other neighboring countries and endowed with 73 tribes. It's such a lovely story. And if I may add, it's a co-host to the Victoria Falls, which is one of the seven natural wonders of the world.
When I think of Zambia, the first thing I think of is safaris. Can you tell us a little bit about the safari experience in Zambia?
So Zambia has a plenty and vast safari experience. It's a land of the walking safari. The country has 20 national parks and about 34 game management areas. If you came to Zambia, you would find one of the biggest national parks in Africa, which is the Kafue National Park. You will find also the South Luangwa National Park, which is a walking safari, where the walking safari was actually pioneered in the 50s, and the rest of the countries started doing the walking safari. It's a land where you will find the largest mammal migration, which is the bat migration of the Kasanka National Park. Sometime around October to the end of the year, about 8 million to 10 million bats actually migrate from the Congo coming into Zambia. It's a phenomenal experience. If you went into some of our national parks, you will find over 400 bird species. And in fact, Zambia is one of the few countries where you will find the big five animals if you took a circuit around the country. So it's a beautiful country, beautiful, beautiful, amazing country.
You talked there several times about the idea of a walking safari, about a walking safari being pioneered. Does that just mean the obvious, that one walks rather than drives around in jeeps, or is there more to it than that?
There's more to it. So you've got the option of actually walking through the wild. And then you also have the option of actually having to drive through jeeps and open vans so that you could have that sort of view. It's an option that you could actually take. But Zambia gives you that sort of experience where you can choose whatever you want to take in the wild, especially during times when it's open land season and you do not have as much grass. During different seasons, you're able to see all the animals around, and you're able to see, to get a glance of the best views of wildlife that you can get.
Beyond the safaris, what else does your country have to offer visitors?
There's much more that the country has to offer beyond the safaris. It's a country that has diverse tourism attractions. I've already talked about 73 tribes. If you came to Zambia, you would appreciate that we have more than 100 colorful traditional ceremonies. So for a country with 73 tribes, you can imagine that each one of those has their own traditional ceremonies. It's actually believed that you could attend 2, 3, or 4 traditional ceremonies every month if you came to Zambia. But it's a place where you can do a lot of camping as well for those that are backpacker type of camping. You find a lot of adventure, a lot of canoeing around, kayaking. If you went towards the Victoria Falls area, which is the southern part of the country, you can do bungee jumping. If you went to the northern part of the country, you can do scuba diving. This is only found in the Western world. You can find it here in Zambia. And for those that are more than lovers of adventure and they are daredevils, you can do microlighting, which is flying over the Victoria Falls and having a bird's eye view of the falls. It's a magnificent view from up there.
We've spoken a lot about the natural life in Zambia. If we were to head into Zambia cities, what should people look out for there?
There's a lot of cosmopolitan activities in the cities that you will find, naturally, like most of the cities around the world. But the only other things that make Zambia really different is, first of all, the warm and welcoming people. You can land in Zambia anytime. It's an English-speaking country. You can land in Zambia anytime and speak to anyone and have no fear of actually being robbed. You will be guided to your destination as though it's some people that you met a long time ago. The nightlife also for party lovers is awesome. And you do look like party lovers, so please come. it's a place where you must come. But if you are walking around the cities, also most of the cultural aspects of the country, you can see them around the towns. Things like traditional crafts and cultural centers. Business tourism also is big. This allows for those that want to come and have business conferences around here. The cities have facilities that will permit them to come and have business, tourism and trade.
Israel's most successful economist of modern times was a gentleman called Stanley Fisher, who was originally from Zambia. Is there anything else of Jewish interest in Zambia?
There's a lot of Jewish interests in Zambia. Anyone coming from Israel, anyone of Jewish descent must be interested in Zambia, because many, many years ago, especially after the liberation for Zambia, when Zambia gained its independence, most of our big monumental structures that we have around the country were actually put together by those that were coming from Israel. If you came to Zambia, you'd be able to see the Jewish synagogue in Livingstone. It's an old structure, but obviously with some interesting things to see there. If you went there again, you would see the Capitol Cinema. It's also in Livingstone. Our biggest university, which is a state university, the University of Zambia, was actually built by manpower coming from Israel. The University Teaching Hospital, which is one of the biggest hospitals in the region, was actually built by a human capital coming from Israel. I could go on and go on. One of the government complexes that we have here, which is a Malungushi house, housing some of the major government departments, was actually built by those coming out of Israel. So there's a lot in common. There's a lot that those that are coming out of Israel must be interested to come and see, and to see why we are staying close to Israel and why they must come and visit Zambia.
Mark and I are both originally British, and Brits, when we travel, tend to travel with an umbrella and a coat and prepared for all eventualities. So from the point of view of the weather, but of course not just the weather, is there a particularly good time of year to visit Zambia? Or would you say, doesn't matter when you come, it's a fantastic destination?
Hey, if you're coming as a tourist, we advise you to come without an umbrella. we love for you to come as you are, if you want to have the full fun. But look, it's a country that is blessed with all sorts of seasons, but most of them are very friendly, the seasons around. So it's a country you can visit all year round, depending on what you want to see. So, for example, if you came around now, the Victoria Falls is at its peak. You will see the falling waters. It's a wonder to watch. If you want to come and see the rocks that are behind the waters, you can come around October. So there are certain seasons which are warmer seasons you could come. Obviously, during the deep rainy season, some of the campsites are closed, and this is because of navigating around becomes a bit of a challenge. But most of the time, the country is really open to everyone. The peak season is from April to around October, because there you have the open safaris, less grass, and therefore you're able to see the animals, and also accessibility of the roads to the many safari points that you would be interested in.
Chivunga, you've really whet our appetite to come and visit Zambia. Where can we find out more information about what to do and how to get to Zambia?
There's a lot of information with most of our embassies that are situated in most of the countries where we have the relationships. If you went into Israel itself, the embassy there would be able to give you sufficient information about Zambia. But if you visited our Zambia Tourism Agency site, which is zambia.travel, you find more than ample information there. It will be telling you about the best sites to visit, when you can come, and also some of the things, and also some guidance around traveling, especially around this period of the COVID. There's some guidance that is given there. All that information is definitely available there. You can also just Google Zambia Tourism. You'll find it on most of our social media pages.
Chivunga Lungu from the Zambia Tourism Agency, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure being on your program. I am hoping that I will be seeing you in the next few days, if not just weeks, then we can experience these things. We love to welcome you.
Zambia Fact File. Ethiopian Airways, Emirates, South African, Air Tanzania, Kenya Airways, and Malawian Airlines fly direct to Zambia. Qatar Airways launches direct flights from August the 6th. Local and regional flights can be booked through Royal Air Charter, ProFlight Zambia, and Mahogany Air. The country has three main airports, in Lusaka, Livingstone, and in the Copperbelt province. Getting into and from the main airport in Lusaka to the centre takes about 45 minutes. Zambia has international hotel brands such as Hilton Garden, Radisson Blue, Sogo Sun, Protea, Taj, Avani, and the Urban Hotel Group. For safari, high-quality lodges include Livingstone and the Time and Tide brands. One US dollar will buy you 22.82 kwacha as of the 25th of June 2021. Zambia has a subtropical climate, which is pleasant, with a dry season and a rainy season. It is warmest in October at 31 degrees Celsius and coldest in July at 23 degrees Celsius. The wettest month is December. Zambian cuisine is heavily centered around nshima, which is food prepared from pounded white maize. Nshima is part of nearly every Zambian meal. In addition to nshima, Zambian cuisine includes various types of stews and cooked vegetables. A wide variety of international food is also available. Kosher food is available from the River Club in Livingstone. And now it's time for the news from the Jerusalem Post podcast, Travel Edition. Israel's cabinet postponed plans to allow foreign tourists into Israel from July the 1st by at least a month following an increase in cases of COVID-19.
French boutique airline La Compagnie is launching flights from Tel Aviv to Paris and Newark, New Jersey this month. All seats on La Compagnie's planes are business class and can be opened into double beds. A Tel Aviv-Newark return ticket will cost around $2,000.
As featured in our last episode, residents of Israel, the US, UK, Russia, Turkey, Bahrain, the UAE, Hungary, and Qatar can now enter Azerbaijan with a vaccination certificate and a negative PCR test.
The total value of the world's top 50 hotel brands dropped by 33%, or $23 billion, during the COVID-19 pandemic. That's according to Brand Finance. Hilton remains the number one brand.
French President Emmanuel Macron heavily criticized Greece at an EU meeting, insisting member states should be consistent in only recognizing COVID-19 vaccines approved for use in the bloc. The surroundings now are just something else. We've moved down the hill a little bit further and we are in the Basilica of the Annunciation. David, what can you see?
First of all, from the outside, there is a mass of mosaics from around the world. This is said to be the site of the Virgin Mary's home in Nazareth. We'll talk about the Basilica in a second, but we're just surrounded by images, all of them mosaics depicting her life and, of course, the life of the infant Jesus.
For a travel show, it's interesting that we stood underneath a mosaic from Andorra, and that's between Bolivia and Iraq. All these places that we could visit one day, although Iraq might be a few more years in the distance.
The Basilica itself is dark, but is also very modern. At the center, there is stonework masonry that looks very, very heavy. And as we walked in, I said to you, it's very reminiscent, for those of you who know, the Catholic Cathedral in Liverpool in the United Kingdom is very much a similar feel.
The wigwam, as it's known locally. Yeah, there's a lovely big stone altar in the middle. And around there, there's just space. And you're drawn to the roof from the inside and the light pouring in over that altar, which sits in front of a sealed-off grotto area.
And from Christian art and iconography, we're going to shift our focus now to Jewish art. We're heading off to the Jewish Museum of New York, and we spoke with the Deputy Director of Education and Programs there, Nelly Szilagyi-Benedek, who told us about what the museum has to offer.
The Jewish Museum is one of the world's preeminent institutions devoted to exploring the intersection of art and Jewish culture from ancient to contemporary times. The museum is the first institution of its kind in the United States, and it's one of the oldest existing Jewish museums in the world. We are located on a famous stretch of Fifth Avenue in New York City called Museum Mile. Some of our neighbors are the Metropolitan Museum of Art and the Guggenheim Museum. The Jewish Museum was founded in 1904 in the library of the Jewish Theological Seminary. In 1944, Frieda Schiff Warburg, who had been a seminary trustee and was the widow of the prominent businessman and philanthropist Felix Warburg, donated the family mansion to the seminary for use as a museum. And the building has been the home of the museum since 1947.
Is the museum more about storytelling? Would you say it's more Judaica or art-based? Are people coming to look? Are people coming to listen? Are people coming to learn?
I would say that storytelling, art, and Judaica are interconnected at our museum. I don't see those areas as being mutually exclusive. Our museum's an art museum. We explore the intersection of art and Jewish culture. We present acclaimed art exhibitions that foreground works of art, including Judaica and works by Jewish artists. And those tell stories about Jewish cultural experiences. We also house a collection of nearly 30,000 objects that reflect global Jewish identity. And our collection is very diverse. It includes paintings, sculpture, works on paper, photography, media, archaeological artifacts, antiquities, and ceremonial objects. So when you visit the exhibition Scenes from the Collection, which is currently on our third floor and showcases over 600 works from our collection, you will see traditional pieces of Judaica, such as Torah binders and spice containers, alongside modern and contemporary works of art by artists such as Kehinde Wiley, Mel Bachner, Deborah Cass, Nir Hod, and Arlene Chiquette. And you will also discover a selection of Hanukkah lamps from our collection of over 1,000 lamps, which is the largest in the world.
Do you have a feature exhibition at the moment, and do you have other feature exhibitions planned towards the end of 2021?
The Jewish Museum presents around 5 temporary exhibitions every year. An exhibition that's currently on view through July 11th is Modern Look, Photography, and the American Magazine. And that's an exhibition that explores how photography, graphic design, and popular magazines all converge to transform American visual culture from the 1930s to the 1950s. It highlights a time when avant-garde techniques in photography and design reached the United States via European emigres, including Bauhaus artists who were forced out of Nazi Germany. Another exhibition that's on view is Louise Bourgeois, Freud's Daughter, which is on view through September 12th. This is an exhibition of the modern artist, Louise Bourgeois' art and writings, and it explores her complex relationship with Freudian psychoanalysis. Visitors will be able to see Bourgeois' powerful sculptures and her installations, and those are alongside her writings, many of which are on view to the public for the first time. We also have an audio guide available on our mobile platform, which you can find on our website, to help guide people through the exhibition, along with an audio of the actress Rachel Weisz reading some of Bourgeois' writings. And in terms of future exhibitions, on August 25th, we plan to open an exhibition that will be stunning both in terms of the works of art on view and the compelling stories that will be told. The show is called Afterlives, Recovering the Lost Stories of Nazi-Looted Art. This exhibition traces the fascinating timelines of individual objects as they passed through hands and sites before, during, and after World War II. So visitors will be able to see masterworks by Chagall, Matisse, Picasso, as well as rare examples of Jewish ceremonial objects and important archival photographs and documents that connect the objects to history.
Here's an unfair question for you. What's your favorite piece in the museum?
Well, one of my favorite works of art is Mel Bochner's Joys of Yiddish. It's dated 2012. It's a contemporary work of art by an artist who uses text as his medium. Just to give you a little background, in 2014, the Jewish Museum had an exhibition of Bochner's thesaurus paintings. These were paintings based on synonyms that the artist found in a thesaurus. And the title of the exhibition was Strong Language. The museum acquired one of the paintings in that show, and it's currently on view in Scenes from the Collection on our third floor. Bochner was inspired by the book written by Leo Rosten called The Joys of Yiddish. So the painting contains Yiddish words written in English. They are hand-painted on horizontal lines as though they are written on lined notebook paper. The letters are yellow on a black background, and the lines underneath the words are white. The words are separated by commas. So for people familiar with the Yiddish language, these words can be read as amusing or a bit shocking. They are not the lyrical words of great Yiddish literature and poetry. These are the words that neighbors might use to gossip on street corners, to insult people. What they have in common is that many of them have been incorporated into the English language. Meshuggener, for instance, or Nebish. This work speaks to the power of language to endure, even when communities are uprooted. And it speaks to how immigrants may travel away from their homes, but they are able to bring their culture and their language with them. And then that culture and language becomes woven into the fabric of their new home, the way Yiddish has woven itself into American culture. And if you see the work, you'll notice the final punctuation mark at the end is a comma, indicating that the process of language changing and evolving continues.
How do visitors get to the museum?
So the museum is located on 92nd Street and 5th Avenue, and visitors can get there by car, taxi, bus, or by subway. It's easily accessible.
If people want to know more about the various things that you have described that are currently there or upcoming exhibitions, how can they so do?
I would recommend going to our website, which is thejewishmuseum.org. And you can also find out about some of our past programs, which are recorded on our YouTube channel. So if you go to YouTube and just search for the Jewish Museum, you'll be able to find programs on our past and current exhibitions.
Nellie, thank you very much for appearing on the show.
You're very welcome.
New York Fact File. New York is accessible from everywhere, though there are still no direct flights from Kabul. JFK Airport and LaGuardia are 40 to 20 minutes drive from the museum. To get to Manhattan, subway and air train from JFK is recommended, and bus and subway from LaGuardia. The closest hotels to the museum include the Courtyard by Marriott, the Franklin Hotel and the Mark. The nearest kosher restaurants are 18, Nargila Grill, Mocha Express, Sabah's Pizza, and Hummus Kitchen. Chabad headquarters are located at 770 Eastern Parkway, Crown Heights. Our thanks to today's guests, Chavunga and Nelly. If you enjoyed what they had to say as much as we did, then what would we love you to do, Mark?
We'd love you, if you can hear me, over the children of the Franciscan Sisters School of Nazareth, who are gathering at the Old City restaurant around the corner for their lunch. Give us a 5-star rating on all good podcast providers. Send us some lovely comments. Send us any questions. We'll be happy to answer anybody who writes into us. And download every episode that we've done so far.
You want to hear something very funny as you're lining up the answers to today's questions? We are actually now being photographed by people who were waiting to go into the Old City restaurant because we're two blokes with microphones. This is becoming a bit of a thing.
Stood outside a school.
That's the labs. Yes.
So let's get those quiz questions answered. Question number one. What was the former name of Zambia? And the answer is Northern Rhodesia.
And question number two. Jacob Bar Simpson became the first man to do what? And the answer is, he was the first official Jewish immigrant to New Amsterdam, which of course later became New York.
We seem to have gathered a real crowd around us now, probably more than people listening to this podcast.
Do you reckon we can get them to like, woo! Woo! Yeah, aywa. And those are your sound effects as we depart Nazareth. We hope you have enjoyed this edition of the Jerusalem Post podcast travel edition.
See you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.